Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast, and this week we're going to talk about GDPR, a subject we've talked about, or at least raised on many occasions. And with me, I've got Nigel Tozer from Commvault. Hi, Nigel.
Hi, Chris.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. Hope you are too.
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. I think we're all just enjoying this lovely cold weather. I don't know whether you've had the snow.
Yeah, 10 inches. Joyful.
Wow. Okay. Thankfully, it's all melting here. So why don't you just introduce yourself for everybody, just so they can understand who you are and what you do for Commvault?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Nigel Tozer. I'm the Solutions Marketing Director for Commvault in EMEA. Marketing isn't really what I do. It's more about, you know, positioning the Commvault solutions stack, where it's relevant and how it all works together. I have a technical background, so, you know, plenty of years of data management expertise.
Excellent. So just for anybody who's not sure about Commvault, Commvault was originally a backup company, now classes themselves as a data management company.
That's correct. We do pretty much everything to do with data. If it involves moving, copying, storing it, cloud, on-premises, we do all of that stuff. Compliance too, which is obviously where it feeds into GDPR.
Excellent. So we met a few weeks ago at Commvault Go in the US, and we were hoping to get together and do a podcast on GDPR, because this is one of the things that seems to be pretty interesting to a lot of people. And you see a lot of emails, you see a lot of people talking about the technology, the issue. And we thought it'd be a good idea just to record a podcast between the two of us and talk about what we think GDPR is, how it affects people, and so on. So why don't you just kick us off by saying, what is GDPR?
So GDPR is the General Data Protection Regulation. It's a new EU regulation that's, it's actually a law already, a regulation already, but it doesn't come into force until May 25th next year, 2018. The idea behind it is to actually unify all of the privacy regulations across the 28, soon to be 27 EU states, so that there's a relatively level playing field. And I say relatively because there are some things called derogations where the individual states can differ slightly. And it's really there to bring, you know, the protection of data for individuals in line with the modern world. The last lot of data protection regulations were done before Google or Facebook or any of the other, you know, personal data, big, you know, data sharing companies came to be. So it needed reviewing.
Because we're leaving the EU, we've got plans to leave the EU. I don't think that changes us in any way. I think we're still affected by this, and it'll still continue to be UK law, won't it?
We'll actually have an orphaned version of GDPR. So it's effectively going to hit our statute book. Well, it has already, but it's going to come into force like everybody else next May. There's a data protection bill that's being proposed as part of the package of regulation and laws that we're going to adopt when we leave the EU. And it's pretty much a carbon copy of GDPR. There are some of the differences that we've decided to take on board ourselves, but in all intents and purposes, it's GDPR. We need to do it because as a country, we need to be able to share data with EU countries and have that equivalence.
Okay, so that's a really important point. And we'll come on to who does it cover in a minute, but I think just highlighting the fact that this is an EU regulation that affects anybody who does any business with the EU.
It applies to EU citizens, yes. So it doesn't matter whether you're in the EU or not, it's going to apply to you.
Okay. So why is everybody talking about this? Why is it such a big deal compared to, you know, when we used to have the Data Protection Act? I don't remember when the Data Protection Act came in, that there was a big hoo-ha, but there seems to be a big discussion this time around.
Yeah, I think what's happened is, you know, computers, technology, all the modern world that we've developed around ourselves today collects a lot of data about individuals. I guess when the original Data Protection Act came in, it was mostly pertaining to paper, and it was a lot harder to, you know, hack out the details of tens of thousands of people back then. Those laws, though, they didn't translate into our world today. And I think what's made the headlines and the interest is very much about the negative side of GDPR, which is the big fines that often get publicised, which are 2% or 4% of global revenue, depending on what kind of breach that you have, a breach of the regulation, that is. You can also be banned or suspended from processing personal data, which, depending on the kind of business you are, could shut you down. So I think it's those differences that have made it hit the news.
Do you think those regulations, those enforcement regulations, will really ever get applied to anybody? Do you think that they'll decide that the EU wants to really punish somebody that badly? Or do you think it's just put in there so it gives them the opportunity to?
It's certainly got people's attention. If you're a risk representative for a business and you see that ultimately that fine can be applied to you, you're going to take it seriously. Or more seriously than if you think, oh, it's just something that's, you know, not going to ever really apply. So, and I think what it does is move you on from this notion of, well, actually, it's cheaper to just pay a fine than to actually be compliant with these regulations. So I think it's moved it beyond this point where it can be ignored or to not met to the standards that people who made it wanted to be.
I think you've just raised an interesting point I hadn't thought about, and that's within organisations there will be people who are managing risk around compliance, and therefore when there's a big fine potentially on the cards, they can't afford not to do the right thing to make sure that risk is mitigated. And that is, I guess, one of the side effects of having big fines that could be looming.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're a business turning over or having a profit of multi-millions, then you know, a few thousand or 100,000 fine isn't really going to worry you. As soon as it's looking at 4% of your global revenue, then that's a big number that you have to consider.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that you've done something wrong in the EU particularly. You could be a business that's done something wrong in the EU, but you're talking about global revenue for the entire company, not just for what it turns over in the EU.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you saw the news recently about the Uber hack and how they covered that up, the UK ICO actually took a rather unusual step of kind of wagging their finger and saying, this is exactly the kind of breach, you know, that GDPR is going to have big fines on. So they didn't put any numbers out, but like I say, if you just Google Uber breach and ICO, you'll see their comments. It's very interesting.
I didn't realize they'd done that. That is interesting, because I guess they're saying this is the sort of thing we're going to come after. You know, you can't get away with doing that in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Which I suppose on the one hand is good for the customer, not so great for the company, but certainly bearing in mind this is a rule and a regulation that's actually targeted at helping out the person, the citizen, rather than a corporation. It's that the focus is that way around, isn't it, I would say?
Yeah, it is. It is an attempt to rebalance, you know, the way that we all get our data consumed. Quite often we don't give consent for, or it's there's assumed consent, and the consent's a big issue, of course, which I don't know whether we get to today because it's a huge topic. You know, if you think about a business now, they're very much being turned into custodians of your data rather than, so more of a bank that has obligations rather than just somebody who sees it as their data. You know, it's the business's data. It's nothing to do with you, Mr. Individual or Mrs. Individual. So I think there is that rebalancing, and that's what they're attempting to do.
That's a good lead-in to talk about how this differs from the previous rules we used to have under the Data Protection Act, which I guess all of us have already followed already. I mean, I'm registered on a couple of entities for the Data Protection Act because I handled personal data, but and I guess that means I'm going to be affected going forward. But how are the rules different under GDPR to what we were used to doing? How's it changed?
Well, I think there's actually quite a lot of differences. If you talk to the ICO, they'll tell you that actually it's just an incremental change, and they're right to a point. But a lot of data that previously people would process and think nothing of, such as religious union affiliations, you know, those kind of things, are actually you can't process based on those kind of details about an individual. You've also got this notion of consent, which is much stronger than it used to be. So again, there's lots of discussions about whether you can have automated opt-ins, but most people are saying that that's a thing of the past. So there's actually a lot of organizations going around at the moment trying to reconfirm consent to process data. And the other thing was, if you gave consent, you often gave consent to potentially future considerations and those kind of things. Well, now, if somebody gives consent for their data to be used, it has to be quite specific about exactly how the data is going to be processed and what it's going to be used for. So I think it's going to lead to some nice long privacy statements compared to what we have already, which I don't know about you, I find pretty annoying.
Well, there's an interesting angle that I think should be, I guess, explained by the ICO themselves. And that's, if there is a change in the law that the way they're changing it, that we should be given perhaps more clear understandings rather than a big long legalese of 15, 20, 30, 40 pages. We should be given more of a clear message of here's what we're going to do with your data and here's how we'll use it in the future and here's how we'll delete it when we're finished. I think that would be really useful out the back of this.
I think you're right, Chris, but I think what's going to come from this is you're going to get agreements that will attempt to protect the business rather than actually, you know, take the spirit of these regulations and protect the individual. So it remains to be seen.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the fact that the balance has shifted and it's now more a case of these regulations are about a company being a custodian of your data now. And I, as an example, I can see people might see things like their medical records as an easy one to understand in that sense, because, you know, your doctor's got details of you. And if you go somewhere else, you would take your own data with you. How does that apply to, I don't know, let's pick an example, something like Google or Facebook or even your own bank or anything like that?
I think it's actually hard to apply it to Google or Facebook in exactly those terms. I'm sure there is a way to do it. But what the regulations do is they actually say, well, if you're dealing with a business right now, they hold information on you that allows them to give you a good service or a service that you expect. And under GDPR, you're going to have a right to have that information actually given to a new supplier. Now, in obviously in the medical records, that's something that would happen automatically. There's no reason why one doctor would fight for your services over another here in the UK, at least. But you know, if you take that same example of a bank, I would guess is that the best one. I mean, to some degree, banks have already been doing that. You have this right to switch accounts, and all of your direct debits and those kind of things are already moved. But I guess a more appropriate example would be something like an online retailer. If you want to, you've been buying all your pet supplies from one, and they have your medical history about your pets and animals, those kind of things, which wouldn't normally happen. You will have the rights to have that information sent to the new supplier so that you don't necessarily have to, you know, fill in a form for things that you might not actually be aware of yourself that the supplier's actually generated in the back end.
So it could be some interesting data exchanges that go on that didn't used to go on before off the back of that.
Yeah, so I mean, and this is where a lot of the technology actually comes in that looks at these kind of things. So if you talk to anybody in the know, and there's a lot of, really reputable businesses and whatever that will assess your compliance readiness, as well as quite a few peddling snake oil, unfortunately. But they'll tell you that it's a people, process and technology challenge, with probably process first, then people, and technology actually probably the last thing you should look at. That said, you know, with digital information that we hold and transfer and move around and copy and do all kinds of things with, that's when it becomes really hard to not only find all of that relevant information, but also to comply with other parts of it, like, you know, this right to be forgotten or subject access requests, where you can say, you know, tell me what data do you hold on me. If you're a small business, you know, you've got one CRM system and that's the single truth of everything, I think then you're going to be in pretty good shape. But if you're a much larger business and you've got dozens of customer applications, if not hundreds or even thousands if you're multinational, and all the unstructured data, which quite often comes to, you know, 70 or 80% we see typically in businesses, then that's when it starts to become hard to do those things and where you need to rely on technology to help you.
Okay, so let's talk about those practical changes then. We'll come on to technology after that. So if I'm within a business, it sounds to me like I need to be 100% sure I can say where all my personal data is, and I can identify what all that personal data is and what it's being used for, and I need to be able to track that a lot more effectively going forward.
That's exactly right. You know, the other thing too is personal data, as defined by the EU, has quite a broader definition than things like PII or personally identifiable information, which is the standard they use in the US. And even things like unique device identifiers, IP addresses, and things where if you could, you know, combine a few details, you could find your way back to the person. All of those things become relevant as well. And if you think about things like IoT and what we do on our phones and tablets as we travel around now, there's a lot of businesses collecting a lot of data on us. So it is a huge issue for, especially for large corporations.
I spoke to somebody about that. We had a conversation about that somewhere not that long ago. And we were talking about when you signed into for sake of argument, open Wi-Fi in a hotel. The hotel potentially requiring you to register in order to make sure that if you do anything naughty on their service, they can track you back. So they've got an audit and they can go to the authorities and say, here's the person or the device that did it, you know, so that you can't use those sort of gateways anonymously. But it sounds to me like that as soon as you do that, that means that you're now collecting data, which potentially somebody can go back and say, you could use that to identify me. So you now have to anonymize that or do something with it so that that can't be done.
Well, and that's an interesting part of this. So for law enforcement purposes, where you have to collect data or, you know, keep records of transactions, all of those things actually trump GDPR. So you couldn't be, say, a money launderer, for example, and then do all your money laundering through the financial system and then go back to a couple of banks and say, forget me and delete all of that, right? Clearly, that.
What an interesting idea.
clearly, that would not be a good thing for law enforcement. So, and this is actually one of the bigger problems with GDPR. If you get a right to be forgotten request, how do you unpick it from, yeah, this is something that we should forget versus this is something absolutely we have to keep because law X or Y says we have to? And then there's the grey area in between. It's like, if I forget this, I could be dropping myself as a business in it. I need to keep this record just in case for X or Y reason. So there's a lot of unpicking that the companies in particular have got to do to work this out.
In terms of practical changes, what would there be? It sounds like one is being able to identify all your data. Two is at least having a set of rules that on policies that you think you're applying, which somebody could test you against and say, we decided this is what the policy was and we decided to keep this data or delete this data because this is what we decided was the right thing to do. And I guess at least if you've got a demonstrable policy, somebody can't turn around and say to you, well, you made the wrong decision. At least you can demonstrate you made an attempt to make the right decision, even if it gets challenged in different areas.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I don't want to second guess what the regulator's going to do, but if you read through what they're saying, they want to be collaborative. So say, you know, thousands of people complain about you as a business for whatever reason, and it triggers off an audit from the ICO, and they find that, you know, in their opinion, you're not quite compliant because of exactly those kind of processes that you just talked about. They, you know, they think it should be different, or your record keeping isn't good enough. I think all they're going to do is give you an advisory. I don't think they're going to be all over you and start fining you for that. Now, that's just my opinion. you know, anybody listening to this needs to obviously get the proper legal advice. But
yeah, of course, yeah.
It just, you know, bring out one of those things about how this is going to be run and managed. And it is one of the things that makes it quite difficult because there's a lot of words in there like adequate or reasonable. You know, even he says you need to appoint a data protection officer if you process a large amount of data. It gives you no clue whatsoever what large is. So there is going to be a lot of this that's going to, you know, come out down the line, I think, and get refined over the coming years. So it's going to be a topic that rolls on and on, I think.
Okay, so let's talk about the technology. And I'll touch two pieces first of all. I'll touch a bit of a discussion about the cloud, and then we'll come on and we'll talk about the sort of stuff that Commvault does, and then you can talk about how some of the things that you have might change or help people with GDPR. So the cloud side of things first. It strikes me that there is an issue there for potentially for the cloud providers that they're classed as a processor, I think, in the new rules. And that means that they're to a certain degree liable for anything that goes on with the processing of that data. How far does that really work? Is that just an assumption that people are making today, or is that really true? And, you know, how will it have an effect?
Yeah, so there's two really key concepts. One is a data processor, and the other, as you mentioned, and the other one is a data controller. So if the controller orders the processor to do something or kicks off a system or service based on that, you know, ultimately it is the controller's responsibility about what's being done with that data. And if, you know, a lot of the things that you can do are self-managed, then the processor really isn't liable for those things. It's the controller that decided to do it that way, configured it and set up the processes and so on. So nobody expects the processors to also be the police of this. But of course, if you're using a third-party system, say one of the big public cloud providers, and there's a hack, then there is an element of liability there. So the processor should be taking making every effort to keep things secure from their perspective, and of course the controller has to do the same. So if you are going to use cloud services, you need to see what the arbitration system is if you are hacked, because then you've got to work out whose fault it is. I mean, if you're the controller and you've bought these services in good faith, and then the cloud service provider hasn't, you know, kept up the security or whatever it is that they need to do there, and then you're hacked, then it's probably the cloud provider's fault. So you need to make sure, if you are using cloud services, that all those things are nailed down and you understand exactly what needs to happen should the worst happen to you.
Okay, so that, I guess, includes backup, normal access to data, how things are secured. There's a certain degree of that there where, you know, for instance, if their systems crash and they can't bring the data back, I guess you have to check the small print to see what they're saying they're liable for and what you're liable for.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a common conversation I have around cloud in particular, because ultimately, every single cloud service provider out there is going to have a clause in their contract that says, your data, your responsibility. You know, even the big guys with deep pockets couldn't pay the legal bill if, you know, some really big or important companies lost a ton of data that was on their systems. So they have to limit their liability one way or another. And it's why, you know, we get more and more companies now that are seeing, okay, the cloud's available, but it's not infallible, and I still got to back up my data. So they're taking that into their own hands.
Okay, so from a Commvault perspective, if you look at your technologies and where your technology's headed, how can you help a customer, and how can they sort of come to you and use some of the things that you offer to help them around the GDPR issue?
So one of the things, and I know I mentioned it up front about the fines, because unfortunately that is the thing that gets the headlines and makes people talk about this. But actually, we see GDPR as something that's quite positive. If you look at what business does, and public sector for that matter, they'll collect all sorts of kinds of data in case it's useful. They'll kind of keep it forever. And, you know, everything just grows and grows and grows. And they don't really look after it or understand it. And we've been saying for years that this needs to be sorted out, looked after, because it bloats your backup costs, DR costs, all your cloud services. You should still be managing data in those areas. And actually, retaining data under GDPR is going to be more of a risk than some potential benefit that you might see down the line. So all of a sudden, organizations have got to start to understand the data they hold, what it is, where it is, and kind of how they use it. So to that end, Commvault do a number of things. We can enable you to profile your data so you can find where, you know, personal data lives in your environment. So all that unstructured data, up to 80% of the data that you have as a business, we can help find that for you and warn you if there's, you know, things with credit cards, emails, driver's licenses, whatever it is, on those systems. And if it's in an insecure location, then of course you can either choose to make that location secure or move it to somewhere that is. Or, you know what, just delete it if it's not, it's a copy of data that shouldn't be there. And all of those things help you to kind of re-centralize and organize your data. So actually GDPR could be very well aligned to things like digital transformation.
So are you doing that as part of the backup process, or are there other tools that you offer that would allow people to do that?
No, there's a completely standalone product that we have that will enable you to map, understand that data. It's got workflows for, you know, legal teams, risk representatives, compliance officers, right, those kind of things. And that works completely independently of all of our backup and archive and our traditional search and compliance tools.
Does that mean that you have a team that are actually focused on just doing this as a delivery, like almost like a consultancy?
Well, no, it's a piece of software that you can use. I mean, if you think about what the process a lot of organizations have gone through to get ready for GDPR, they've actually probably brought in a third party to do some analysis, such as a data protection impact assessment. And that's okay, but that's a one-off event. So literally the day after you've done that, somebody could copy some personal data, put it in a location where it shouldn't be, or maybe is less secure. So what this tool aims to do is give you not only those workflow things to find data for right to be forgotten, subject access requests, and all those deliverables that you have to do under GDPR that you can't charge for. But it also gives people like the compliance officer and risk representative a dashboard so they can see what's going on in the business and how it's changing, so they can take appropriate action.
Okay, got you. Do you think we'll see a big change in people's practices as a result of this? We sort of touched on that at the beginning of this, and throughout, that you think that it's a good opportunity for people to change their practices. But there's a difference between hoping that people will change their practices and actually seeing that occur in reality. Have you got any evidence to say that you think that process has happened already, or do you think it will?
I actually see a spectrum, Chris, to be fair. There's a lot of companies that we talk to that are taking this really seriously. They see it as a good opportunity to, you know, do some of the things that they've probably wanted to do for years. And because all the headlines about the fines are giving some concerns to the board, they're actually getting the budget to do some of those things. And that's all really positive. And if they are aligning it to things like digital transformation, then great. But I also see the opposite end of the scale, where there's some people who just think it's a security problem and they're buying some encryption software and that's it, or they just think if they update their privacy notices then they're fine, so it's a legal problem, it's been dealt with in that department. And I still see a lot of IT teams, even C-level, where they've got a little bit of head in the sand syndrome, where they're saying, well, you know what, all that's a business problem, they'll come to me when they need it fixing. And of course, if they do that, they're more likely to end up putting sticking plasters in place for parts of the problem rather than, you know, reworking some of the core processes back and getting some of the many efficiencies that you can also get along the way, along your GDPR journey.
Yeah, it's a shame, really, because you'd hope that people would be aware of the fact that this is an opportunity to do something that has an impact in lots of different places and lots of different areas. So you'd think that they would work harder to try and appoint somebody and then have somebody as a focus. But I guess that's what you see in everything, I guess, with the business. You know, it's the same thing, I guess, with any sort of data management issue like backup. We guess we see that already. So probably no change there.
Absolutely. You know, it's a spectrum. It's a spectrum thing, just like, as you say, the backup recovery processes. And even, I mean, the other thing that I think it's been missed is this opportunity. If you do have to invest in something for GDPR, you know, make sure that it's going to give you some other benefits beyond just, you know, changing or protecting one particular area of your business. You know, if you can reduce the amount of data you keep, then there's obviously storage benefits there. Like I said, backup, DR, cloud, knock-on benefits. But by the same token, you know, even things like getting control of what DBAs do and the dev test processes. I mean, if you look at all the, well, a lot of the recent breaches, it's been databases of information in an insecure location that have been created because somebody could do that. And if you can control how those database copies are created for dev test, but also maybe speed up how those database copies are fed through the workflow of, you know, getting back into production, then you've done two things. You've actually helped cut down the risk of a breach because you've got all of that stuff under control and it's, you know, auditable. But by the same token, you've got it, so it's working much faster for you. So your time to market is shorter. So there's a lot of things that you can do for GDPR that will help you in other areas.
It sounds like you're confirming there's a huge amount of process involved in this rather than the technology. And as you said, people, process, and then technology possibly last out of all of it.
Yeah, which probably an unusual thing to hear from a technology vendor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is, which always makes it good to have that sort of discussion, because it means then there's no bias about, you know, what you're talking about, which is always good. Where can people find more information? Do you have anything on your website? Is there anything you can point us to? I can always add to the show notes.
Yeah, of course, Chris. We've actually got quite a lot of analyst-related content, which we put out there because, just like we just said, you know, people don't want to listen to vendors about this. They want to get the real deal. But if you go to commvault.com/GDPR, there's okay. Some of our own information on there. There's some information about what you need to do and some third-party stuff from analysts, again, to get that balanced view.
And if people want to stalk you on social media, can they find you on Twitter or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's at Nigel Tozer. That's T-O-Z-E-R. I'm a regular tweeter on this particular topic and others. I don't just tweet about Commvault, so you don't have to worry about that, but you're likely to get other opinions too.
That's great. Thanks for joining me, and talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Nigel.